This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, February 12, 2020. Ahead this hour, a preview of what it takes to become a god of death in Once on This Island on stage at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. And another preview of live music we can take in through the weekend. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has his usual Wednesday guide ahead. After our show on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston, Airbnb was a crazy idea when it first got started in 2008. Now it's a worldwide phenomenon. A conversation with the company's co-founder and CEO, Brian Chesky, on Here and Now beginning at 1 this afternoon on KUAF. You have a chance to learn more about intellectual property tomorrow. Meredith Lowry, an attorney with Wright Lindsay Jennings, will explain inventions, designs, and the steps inventors should consider to protect their ideas. Meredith will host the session at the University of Arkansas Engineering Research Center tomorrow morning from 9 to 11. Information about tickets can be found at the Facebook page for Understanding Intellectual Property or the Arkansas Small Business and Technology Development Center website, ASBTDC.org. This is Ozarks at Large. It has been 2 months since Officer Stephen Carr was shot and killed while sitting in his patrol car behind the Fayetteville Police Station near the downtown square. Since then, police departments around Northwest Arkansas have taken steps to improve security for their officers. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
It's just been a really strange time, you know.
That's Tony Murphy, a sergeant with the Fayetteville Police Department.
Being here 16 years and talking to a lot of guys that have been here longer than that, you expect something to happen. You know, we've been kind of lucky in the time that I've been here where no officers have been seriously injured with a firearm or something like that. And we just couldn't have guessed it would happen like this. So, you know, everyone's just kind of trying to recover and getting our feet back under us. And we never stop serving the citizens of Fayetteville. That's our job. And they've really helped us get through this, you know, not just the citizens of Fayetteville, but the state. And we felt the support, and we really appreciate that. And we'll just keep remembering them.
This incident prompted the department to take immediate action regarding security, but Sergeant Murphy says plans were already underway to construct a new facility because security has been a concern at their current building. Last April, Fayetteville voters approved 10 bond issues, including one that would earmark about $36 million for construction of new police headquarters.
We had a bond pass, and we're going to build a new police department, and that was definitely one of our main things was security of the building before this incident occurred. So, and we knew that that was an issue at our police department, you know, because it was an old JCPenney's or Sears, and it was just, it's kind of bunched in there with all these other buildings around it, so it was kind of hard to secure.
In the meantime, Sergeant Murphy says the mayor supported the police department in doing what they could to enhance security at their current facility near the downtown square. He says they have individuals certified in crime prevention through environmental design who go to businesses or homes to analyze ways to improve the security of these buildings. The department had these officers inspect their current building to make their own security improvements.
And we improve the lighting. Like if you go up there now and look at the lighting in the middle of the night, it looks like daytime. So we remove some of the shrubbery from around the police department that would allow someone to hide. We remove some of the fencing to make it see-through so someone can't hide behind that. You know, we've added cameras. That's going to be our next thing to add, more advanced cameras throughout that alleyway and around the police department. And we've added barricades or bollards in front of the parking spaces in front of the police department, so that protects from any kind of vehicle, whether someone makes a mistake and keeps their foot on the gas or it's malicious, you know, driving through one of our walls or something.
Around the region, other departments are doing what they can to upgrade security, too. The Centerton Police Department added a fence around its parking lot, and the Bella Vista Police Department is looking to do the same. 2 weeks ago, the Bella Vista City Council voted to amend the 2020 city budget to appropriate $55,000 in undesignated reserves to the security fence project. Chief of Police James Graves says the department is housed in an old office building, and because it wasn't originally designed to be a police department, there are a lot of security concerns.
We're going to secure half of the parking lot behind a 6-foot security fence with some industrial barbed wire strands at the top of it, some privacy slats along some backside portion of it so that the officers, when they park their cars in the area where they'll offload prisoners and or load their gear, will have a little privacy and they won't be so exposed. And then it'll have additionally a 6-foot gate that will be pressure sensitive pad on the inside, so when officers go to leave, the gate will open, and that it'll be controlled with a fob type key entry on the outside so that only authorized personnel could come into the secure portion of the parking lot.
The city of Bella Vista is having a special election March 3rd. Residents will be asked to vote for or against the issuing of bonds to pay for the cost of 3 public safety projects, along with a 1% sales tax increase to go toward the payback of those bonds. One of those projects is construction of a new public safety facility, which will house a new police department, the city's police, fire, and EMS dispatch center, and the Bella Vista District Court. Chief Graves says if the measure is approved, construction of a new police department will allow them to address security issues from the ground up.
One of the reasons I hadn't really looked at the security concerns here, though I knew they were here, is I didn't want to spend the money than what I knew hopefully we'll be able to just address all those concerns in the near future if we build a new police department. But again, tragic events happen and we realize, that we need to do a little something now, and the security fence really is the best thing that we can do that will be something that could be utilized in the future. Because even after we leave, so if the voters approve the building of our new public safety complex, and the police department in a couple of years relocates that new building, the fire station, Station 1, the main fire station in Bella Vista, will remain on site here because we share this property with them, as will City Hall. And so they'll benefit from the security fence as well. So it's not going to be a waste of money.
Chief Graves says he hopes to complete the bidding process for the project in time to present the contractor to the city council later this month. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Sergeant Tony Murphy says plans are underway to celebrate Officer Carr's life later this spring. His badge number was 413, so officials are organizing a celebration for April 13th. This is Ozarks at Large. It is the morning after the New Hampshire Democratic primary. Results indicate Bernie Sanders finished first, Mayor Pete Buttigieg second, and Senator Amy Klobuchar third. Also today, we have the first poll of Arkansas Democrats' preference, courtesy of Talk Business and Politics, and it has somebody else at the top, though a slim lead. That's Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York City, here to talk with me about the poll. From Talk Business and Politics is our friend Roby Brock. Roby, happy Wednesday.
Good to be with you, Kyle, and with all of your listeners.
Let's talk about these results from this first poll. Michael Bloomberg sits at the top with 19.6%. Former Vice President Joseph Biden right behind him at 18.5%. And the list goes from there to Bernie Sanders at 16.4%. Now, what are your first takeaways from these results?
Well, and I would throw Pete Buttigieg in at 15.5%. My first takeaway is that, number one, television advertising works because Michael Bloomberg has been all over the TV airwaves in Arkansas and truly has come from zero to this 19.6% lead right here. And the other thing is there's only 4 percentage points separating first and fourth place. And so to me, it's just a logjam when you look at the margin of error in the poll and the fact that little bitty things can affect the outcome of where these races may go. For instance, if more African-American voters turn out, that helps Joe Biden, we see in the crosstabs. If younger voters turn out, that's going to help Bernie Sanders. So you know, just a slight uptick or change in some of the demographic data could certainly rearrange these results from first through fourth. But it looks like it's going to be a tight race in Arkansas unless somebody builds some tremendous momentum over the next couple of weeks.
This is a March 3rd primary. There are some other contests between now and then. Joe Biden had a disappointing finish last night in New Hampshire. I guess we're assuming that he'll still be a viable candidate on March 3rd, but you don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. But yeah, I think South Carolina is a big litmus test for him in particular. I think if he does not have a good showing there, you know, and I think good showing means first place, there's going to be a lot of question marks around his candidacy going forward. I do think that despite kind of that conventional wisdom of thinking, I mean, there really aren't that delegates that have been pledged. And even by the time we get to Super Tuesday, there won't be that many delegates pledged because these candidates are, you know, these states that are having these caucuses and primaries early are not winner-take-all states. So, you know, there's divvying up of the small number of delegates from a New Hampshire, from an Iowa, from a South Carolina. And so no one's going to be really far down the road, but the, you know, in politics, momentum's everything and perception is a lot of reality. And so you will see the field weed out some as a result of some poor showings, even though they really won't be that far behind in the delegate count, which is what really matters.
And Arkansas has 36 delegates. Arkansas is not a winner-take-all state either.
It's not. And if you kind of have this four-way tie that you're seeing among these top four candidates here, you have to get over 15% of the vote to get some sort of portion of the delegates. And right now we've got four that are sitting above 15%. So Arkansas's 36 delegates could be divided up amongst those four people. And again, you're talking a handful of delegates per person in the grand scheme of things. You got to get, I think it's well over 1,100 delegates total. So it really, it's a bit premature to say somebody's candidacy may be dead. But at the same time, when they're not winning and they're finishing in fourth and fifth place, if they're not picking up delegates, they are a little bit dying on the vine. But as long as you're picking up delegates and I'm a candidate, even if I'm finishing lower than others, I stick around and see if momentum shifts my way if I've got the money to do it.
Michael Bloomberg has been on the airwaves in Arkansas. He came here to file. He was in Little Rock for the Martin Luther King Jr. Day parade. He's got an office in Fayetteville. Arkansas is a deeply red state. Is there any reason to think that any of the other Democratic presidential candidates will invest time or money between now and Super Tuesday?
I don't think we'll see them invest as much time or money as Michael Bloomberg has done in Arkansas. Because he is running this Super Tuesday strategy, he's not playing for those early delegates that, as we're seeing, are starting to be carved up in really small portions, which is turning out to be a pretty prescient strategy for him. You know, it gives him definitely a shot as people are still shopping around and not really decided on a particular candidate in terms of some sort of outright or overwhelming, you know, visible support there. So again, just with this few delegates as Arkansas has, the fact that this poll shows that they may be carved up quite a bit, and the fact that there are other states that will be participating on Super Tuesday, I wouldn't look for a major influx of spending and candidate time in Arkansas. There will be some. There will be some appearances. You can be going to one state and, you know, do some drop-ins, and Arkansas get some of that. I think the other thing is, I do know Bernie Sanders has placed some media advertising in Arkansas. It just hasn't come on air yet. So I do think we will see some Sanders advertising. I wouldn't be surprised if we see some Buttigieg and some Joe Biden advertising as well.
All right. You can see results of the entire poll at talkbusiness.net. Roby Brock, thanks as always for your time.
Good to be with you, Kyle.
This is Reflections in Black, and I'm your host, Raven Cook. Reflections in Black is a segment dedicated to exploring the legacy of Black Americans in the United States and around the globe. Reflections in Black also provides resources for understanding and hope for all people. Arturo Alfonso Schomburg was born on January 24, 1873, in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Schomburg was inspired by Latin revolutionaries and wanted to join the movement to ensure human rights for his people. In 1891, Schomburg arrived in New York City and began working in the Puerto Rican independence movement. But eventually, the disbanding of revolutionary parties forced him to focus his energies on mobilizing through another movement, Black Liberation. Schomburg traveled to the American South, where he saw the overt racial oppressions and took an interest in learning American history. He began reading numerous texts, collecting manuscripts, and would join the American Negro Academy with men like Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois and Paul Laurence Dunbar. Schomburg would go on to found the Negro Society for Historical Research and actively work to collect and create space to tell the story of Black America. Arturo Alfonso Schomburg would pass away in 1938, but many would utilize that space to learn and craft argument for how to move Black America forward through the Civil Rights and Black Power movement. Today, the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture stands in the heart of Harlem and continues to be a space for the research and revealing of the incredible legacy of African Americans in the United States and around the globe. Today, we celebrate the incredible life and legacy of Arturo Alfonso Schomburg.
Reflections in Black is a production of KUAF Public Radio, 91.3 FM in Fayetteville. You can hear weekly segments of the program on Ozarks at Large, or you can hear past editions at KUAF.com. Just search Reflections in Black.
This is Ozarks at Large. In a first for the region, the City of Rogers is looking to hire an arts and culture manager to establish an arts and culture program for the city. John McCurdy, the city's director of community development, says this has been a long time coming, but the need for the position became even more evident after the nonprofit Art Space came to the region to conduct a study of affordable artist housing and studio space.
One thing that kind of emerged from that is that there was no belly button in the city. There was nobody for whom their job was to deal with arts. And so that really brought the matter to everybody's attention.
McCurdy says there's a surprising number of people doing art in the city, and the city's artistic assets continue to grow. That includes the Arkansas Arts Academy, an arts-driven charter school in downtown Rogers, Arkansas Public Theater, which performs in the city-owned Victory Theater, and the Rogers Experimental House, a creative studio and gallery that provides resources for local artists and makers.
And so there's a lot of good stuff going on. It's just a little bit fractured in the city. I mean, the city government doesn't have an intentional role in this. And so that makes it difficult to fully utilize public spaces and to have somebody that has, the gravitas of the government to help to coordinate some of these efforts and to make them more cohesive and effective.
The need for an arts and culture manager also became necessary after the city made plans to revitalize Frisco Park in downtown Rogers. John McCurdy says they're finalizing contracts for that construction this month.
One of the most significant elements of that park will be a stage that will host music and other performance art and be able to seat up to 1,000 or in a festival type setting, a couple of thousand people. And so these public assets need to be used, and so it's very important to us that when that park opens, we have a program ready to execute where we are providing good, high-quality performances in that park.
The residents of Rogers have also expressed the importance of keeping an authentic identity as the city's arts and culture scene grows. But McCurdy says the definition of that can be elusive, especially in the context of the identity of Northwest Arkansas as a region.
You know, with all that, this person, our director of arts and culture for the city, it needs to be somebody that can really unpack that and understand how does Rogers function within this ecosystem of Northwest Arkansas. in a way that brings people together, that makes lives better and more meaningful and really vitalizes our city in a way that we can all be proud of. So it's a very interesting challenge.
More than half of the funding for the position is coming from the city. The rest will come from a Walton Family Foundation grant. McCurdy says Rogers may be the first to seek an arts and culture manager, but there's a regional interest in creating this type of position in other cities.
And I suspect that all the cities in Northwest Arkansas will eventually have an organization such as this one.
Aside from hiring an arts and culture manager, the city is also looking to hire an arts and culture administrative assistant who will work alongside the manager. Voters in Fayetteville are giving approval to a bond issue for the school district. More than 88% of those casting ballots were in favor of the measure. Just under 2,800 voters, about 5% of registered voters, cast those ballots. The founding executive director of Canopy Northwest Arkansas will leave the agency this summer. Emily Crane Lynn is moving to Washington, D.C., according to a blog post from Canopy's board chair. Canopy is a nonprofit refugee settlement agency in Fayetteville, founded 3 years ago. Since then, it has resettled more than 150 refugees in Arkansas. According to the blog post, she is moving to Washington, D.C., where her husband has accepted a position as a federal judge clerk, and she will pursue graduate studies in international development. A search for her replacement is underway. Those NCAA tournament dreams are perhaps fading for the Arkansas Razorback men's basketball team. Last night, Arkansas lost to Tennessee 82-61 to drop a third consecutive contest. Arkansas is now 16-8 overall, but just 4-7 in the SEC. Up next, a sold-out game against Mississippi State in Bud Walton Arena Saturday at noon. The Kitchen at Queen Wilhelmina State Park in Mena can claim the Top Chef Prize for Arkansas State Parks. The competition, held yesterday, included chefs from parks from around the state. Chef Ken Morse won with his fajita salad with roasted asparagus. It was the first win for the park in the 7-year history of the competition. And speaking of food, stay tuned, because we're going to learn what toppings go on a $1,000 pizza.
So you have the gold that you put on pastry. So we have, you know, very thin, but it's 24 karat gold. And then we took lobster and we poached it with champagne, poached it in champagne, and then added a little bit of vanilla.
And that's just the beginning. Eureka Pizza's $1,000 pizza ahead on Ozarks at Large.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Fayetteville Mardi Gras 29th Annual Parade of Fools is February 22nd at 2 p.m., beginning at the downtown Fayetteville Square and continuing down Dixon Street. This family event offers costumes, floats, beads, and more. The 2020 Grand Marshals are Peter Lane and Barbara Putman. Facebook or FayettevilleMardiGras.com for more. SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, continues its 65th season March 21st at Walton Arts Center. SONA musicians perform the season's third Masterworks Concert, featuring Mozart's Clarinet Concerto and Beethoven's Symphony No. 3. Tickets at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org.
It is Wednesday, February 12th, 2020. Here to get us ready for a weekend of live music that happens to include Valentine's Day is Timothy Dennis. How are you, Timothy?
I'm great, Kyle. How are you?
Very good.
Let's start the weekend early tonight.
All right.
DeFrance is going to perform up at Meteor Guitar Gallery in Bentonville.
Mm-hmm.
They say it's one of their last shows before they head out to Colorado to open up for classic rock stalwarts Foghat.
So just to be clear, DeFrance is in Bentonville.
Right. Foghat is not.
Right.
Tickets for that show at Meteor Guitar Gallery are $10. Should get on our way at about 8 o'clock tonight.
All right.
Moving on to tomorrow night, a guy by the name of John Wolfe is going to be on stage at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville.
Country guy, right?
Country guy, yeah. From Austin.
I don't plan to have a good time, so honey, just top off this glass. Take this pocket full of dimes and go wake up that old
tree. Tickets for that are $10 in advance. They go up to $12 tomorrow. Should get our way at about 9 o'clock tomorrow night. Again, that's at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. Okay, moving on to Friday night, Valentine's Day.
Yep.
Let's start with a kind of, I would consider, a non-Valentine's Day-ish option.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a rock and roll show at Smoke and Barrel Tavern featuring The Travel Guide and The Rumors.
Thank you.
show gets underway at 10 o'clock Friday night. Again, that's at the Smoke and Barrel Tavern in Fayetteville.
Everybody has a different different idea of Valentine's Day, so that can be a Valentine's Day for somebody.
I suppose so. Yeah. Another more, I would consider, traditional option that's happening in Fayetteville Friday night, it's a dance. Square dance, actually. Mm-hmm. The Fayetteville Old Time Square Dance is moving theirs up by a couple of weeks, because normally it's at the end of the month, but they're doing it a couple weeks early on account of the holiday.
I got you.
That is taking place at Backspace Friday night. They're asking for a $5 donation at the door. Should get our way at about 8 o'clock with a lesson, and then the actual dancing gets underway after that.
If you ever go to the ballroom at the top of the Basin Park, if you look up, the lights are shaped in squares. Mm. And the reason being, I've been told, is that they used to have square dances in there, and it was a visual cue for people where to line up.
I'd buy that. Moving on, more music. Valentine's Day.
Moving on.
Another option for Valentine's Day in Fayetteville, Block Street Hot Club is going to be on stage at Mojo's playing their gypsy jazz.
And that'll be a fun, fun time.
That set gets underway at about 7 o'clock Friday night. Again, that's at Mojo's Pints and Pies in Fayetteville. Another option up in Springdale, Sycamore is going to be on stage at Black Apple Crossing. You had them in last week.
Right, and they did some of their newer songs, which were about the environment and thinking about responsibility. What they're going to do at Black Apple...
is not that.
No, it's love songs, baby.
I like it.
Yeah.
That show, as many shows do at Black Apple Crossing, gets underway at 8 o'clock Friday night. Again, that is at Black Apple Crossing on Emma Avenue in Springdale. Happening up in Bentonville, Meteor Guitar Gallery is going to have kind of a Valentine's Day show featuring Funk Factory, Bijou, and Rodney Block Collective.
Mm-hmm.
Say you love me today, and that's so confusion is all. One line a day, yesterday, you know people call up. See, I give you my heart, baby, love me non-stop. It did do me for hearts like a gunshot. No matter the storm or the weather, stand tall. I go there by your side, baby, no stop.
Tickets for that show are $15 in advance. That gets underway at 8 o'clock Friday night. Again, that's at Meteor Guitar Gallery in Bentonville.
Mm-hmm.
Happening in Rogers Friday night, John Dooley is going to be on stage at Growler USA. That set gets underway 8 o'clock Friday night. Again, that's at Growler USA in Rogers. And then Sarah Lothan is going to be on stage at Creekside Tap Room in Siloam Springs.
Wish there was a chance to hear her before then.
Well, you know what? There is. No. She's going to be on our noon show Friday, talking about that show and also an upcoming album with her other band.
Very good.
That set, seeing her live, though, Friday night, gets underway at 7 o'clock Friday night. Again, that's at Creekside Tap Room in Siloam Springs. Now, on the other end of the listening area, in the other Springs, Eureka Springs is going to welcome back Chucky Wags and his company of rags.
And that'll be fun.
Here we go again, it's the end of the game. Well, there ain't no one to blame, it's just one of those things. So I walk on down the street to the corner by the square. I know everybody there and they know my name. So tell them girls to put on their...
Of course, he's going to be on stage at Chelsea's. Should get underway at about 9 o'clock Friday night. Again, that's at Chelsea's in Eureka Springs. Then down in Fort Smith, Harry's Downtown is going to have Brand J over from Tulsa.
That's a Valentine show.
Should get underway at about 7:30 Friday night. It is free. Again, that's at Harry's Downtown in Fort Smith. Let's move on to Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
A guy by the name of Peter Rexford is going to be on stage at 612 Coffee House in Fayetteville.
It isn't how it was. First a feeling, then a fear. The second coming final year.
Ask your... Should get right about 8 o'clock Saturday night. Again, that's at 612 Coffee House on Weddington Drive in Fayetteville.
Yes.
Then up in Bentonville, Meteor Guitar Gallery is going to have Lively Up. They're a reggae collective from Wichita.
No, cool.
Tickets for that show are $8 in advance, go up to $10 on Saturday. Should get on right about 8 o'clock. Again, that's at Meteor Guitar Gallery in Bentonville. Then down in Fort Smith, Harry's Downtown is going to have kind of a blues night with Oreo Blue and the Eric Matthews Band.
All right, that's good stuff.
Northbound traffic is slow in the morning. Southbound traffic's a bear in the afternoon. So I think I'll change my direction. I think I'll change my tune.
Cover for that show is $5. Gets underway at 9 o'clock Saturday night. Again, that's Harry's Downtown in Fort Smith. Then moving on to Sunday, Sean Harrison is going to release a new CD at George's Majestic Lounge.
Becca Martin Brown tells me this is a free show?
It is a free show.
For a CD release party. Now, you don't get the CD for free.
No.
Okay.
I would assume not.
That'd be ridiculous.
That starts at 4 p.m. Sunday at George's Majestic Lounge. But that's not all that's happening Sunday.
Oh, but wait,
Eureka House Concerts is going to have their next show featuring Molly O'Brien and Rich Moore.
Mm-hmm. Back to Ma and Pa. Reckon I saw her next to my truck pumping gas with the car backed up. We talked as neighbors will. They're waiting for the tanks to fill. We talked about nothing. How it might snow. How far she had to go. Going back where the grass grows tall.
That gets underway with a meet and greet potluck at 5. Music usually starts about 6 o'clock. Again, that's at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Eureka Springs.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tuesday night, Harper and Lee will be on stage at Mickey Finn's in Fayetteville.
Harper and Lee.
They're a husband and wife alt-Americana duo.
There used to be a band. I'm going somewhere with this. There used to be a band, I think in the 80s or 90s, called the Boo Radleys. They should be with Harper and Lee.
That should be a double bill right there.
Right, they should play at Mockingbird Cafe.
Oh, my God, Kyle.
All right.
That show with Harper and Lee at Mickey Finn's gets underway at 8 o'clock. That's Tuesday night. Again, Mickey Finn's on Dixon Street in Fayetteville.
All right. Timothy Dennis is a good sport. Thank you, Timothy.
Thank you, Kyle.
And don't you think it's time that you left it alone? I've got nothing left alone. Don't you let me alone. Mama cried alone tonight. Holy roller coaster.
This is Ozarks at Large. Thanks for spending part of your Wednesday with us. This week, Once on This Island is on stage at Walton Arts Center. The musical, the 2018 Tony winner for Best Revival for a Musical, is about a young woman risking everything for love and challenging gods along the way. This morning, Tamira Gray, who is Papa Gay, the deity of death in the production, came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. She's been on Broadway, in Rent, and in Once on This Island, on television and series, including Boston Public, and she was a top-tier finisher in the first season of American Idol. She says she has delighted in investing into the character of Papa Gay, for Once on This Island.
I'm one of those actors who, once rehearsal is done, I'm still going into the wee hours of the night to get it all drilled in my head. And as playing Papa Gay, there's so much literature out there that you can draw on from myths about the Dark One or the Demon of Death. And I basically read a lot of different stories. And there's this book called The Divine Horseman, which talks about the Haitian deities. And Papa Gay is basically, he's the god of the crossroads. So he's the shepherd that brings in those two. There's another deity above him. But in our show, he is the demon of death. He is the one who takes you away. And so from all the work that I did, it basically is now just infused in my character. And when we started the rehearsal process where we were no longer allowed to have our book with us and it was all memorized, all of a sudden this voice came out. And then it was like, and this is how I'm going to talk. And Papa Gay is usually played by a man. So I didn't want any form of myself to show forth. Like, I felt like if you could recognize me and my character, then I wasn't doing my job.
That sounds challenging.
Well,
it sounds like work. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but it sounds like
Well, yeah, acting is work. You know, you do the work so that you can feel free and play and live in the moment when you're on stage. And, you know, that's what I wanted to be able to do because I've never played the villain, never played the bad guy, and no one's ever seen the demon of death. So that means that there's no rules. So as the only thing that's stopping you is your own imagination. And I have a very vivid one, so I wanted to go in, you know, and just really live in this world of my character.
You enjoy this.
I do so very much. I feel very blessed.
This is a story, I think, that you could say is about one finding one's place.
Yes.
And that's a universal story.
It's a universal story indeed. Yes. And Timoon, she was... When she was small, she was separated from her mother in a storm. And so she believes that the gods saved her in order for her to unite the two sides of the island. Our show deals with colorism. So you've got the light-skinned blacks who are the wealthy, and you've got the dark-skinned blacks who are the peasants. And Timoon, which means adopted daughter, Timoon is one of the peasants. And when this light-skinned black boy named Daniel crashes on her side of the island, she says, I found my purpose. This is why the gods saved me. I'm going to unite the two sides. And, you know, our ancestors once fell in love, and this time they're going to solidify the deal. And so she cannot be distracted or she is 100% in faith and believes that that's her purpose. And so my job and the other gods' job is to manipulate her along the way, you know, and as she's on her journey, there's nothing anybody can say or do that will derail her. And, you know, and I think that we've all been through that. You know, when you have a journey, I remember myself when I was a little girl, right before I competed in American Idol, I'd been singing forever and my mom had it. She was like, you need a real job. And I was like, but I have a job and this is what I want to do. She's like, you're not making any money. And if you don't get a job, I'm going to kick you out. And if it wasn't for her boyfriend, who was like, she's almost there. Like, give her a second. You know, I would have probably been on that. Well, we've all been on that similar journey, I think. You know, so, yeah.
And it's about still believing in yourself.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and what's that tightrope between believing in yourself and
I think that
being delusional or, well, that's not fair. But, you know.
It is fair, though, because there are things like, if I relate it to my own story, my mom thought that I was delusional. Like, you've been trying for this for so long and it hasn't happened. When are you going to give it up? You know, and it takes a true commitment and belief in oneself to go after something that seems unobtainable. And that's what Timoon does, despite her parents telling her, no, you can't do this. He will not fall in love with you. That's not the way this world works. And she says, no, I will be the change. You know, and I believe that that is the faith and the conviction that we all have when we're going after a dream that seems, you know, so far and impossible.
Is it too much to extrapolate from this when you're a character and you're thinking about going beyond and I will be the change, not just thinking about romantic love or your own personal dream, but you could be the change? Bigger?
Yes.
Societal?
Absolutely. And as my character, for instance, you know, everybody has this idea of death or the evil one as not being able to change. You know, like, it's very strict. You bring forth death, and there is no sense of compassion, no sense of love. You can't be changed. And the thing that I love about our story is that my character, who has lost faith in humanity and their ability to stay honorable and hold up their end of the bargain and love one another, doesn't believe in that anymore. To see that Timoon, despite the fact that this boy has used her and has basically taken advantage of her, still says no in that pivotal moment when I offer her to get rid of him. She says, no, I made this bargain. And I'm going to stay here. And it changes my heart because she does give her soul for him. And I then rediscover compassion.
You're able, at playing a deity representing death and unknown, you're able to find the humanity.
I'm able to find the humanity in that. And I feel like that is what we all, as human beings, seek in our life. You know, and Timoon is that character that is the ultimate, not just the ultimate sacrifice, but the ultimate sense of compassion, the ultimate sense of love. You know, she says, hey, I've made these choices and I loved you with my whole being and I'm not sorry for it.
Well, congratulations on all the success you've had and that you're going to have. And thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Tamira Gray is Papa Gay, the deity of death in the national touring production of Once on This Island. It's at the Walton Arts Center through Sunday afternoon. You can find out more at waltonartcenter.org.
It's the Community Spotlight. We continue our series for the Purple Project for Democracy, a national effort to examine civic understanding. Today, Suki Lynn Heyer, civics instructor at Fayetteville High, talks about the Electoral College.
When you vote for the President of the United States, you're actually voting for an elector to cast a vote for you. The Electoral College was established in Article 2 of the United States Constitution. It explains that every state will get a vote for each member of Congress from that state. So Arkansas has 6 electoral votes, 1 for each member of the House of Representatives. This is based in population, so we have 4 in Arkansas, and then 1 for each senator. Every state has 2, regardless of population. This means that Arkansas has 6 electoral votes. Most states have a winner-takes-all system, except for Nebraska and Maine, meaning that all electoral votes go to the candidate who wins a majority of votes in that state. 5 times in our history, the winner of the popular vote did not win the presidency because of the Electoral College. In 1824, John Quincy Adams. 1876, Rutherford B. Hayes. 1888, Benjamin Harrison. 2000, George W. Bush. And 2016, Donald J. Trump. The Electoral College was written into the Constitution for several reasons. To start, it was a compromise between the Federalists, who wanted a strong central government, and the Anti-Federalists, who were more keen on states' rights. This gave the states a say-so in who was elected president, and particularly gave small states a voice. Second, transportation and technology of the time made direct election impossible. Since there have been 2 presidents in modern history who lost the popular vote and won the Electoral College has come under fire. People who oppose the Electoral College argue that modern technology has made the Electoral College obsolete, that the Electoral College gives too much power to a handful of swing states, that the Electoral College depresses voter turnout because it doesn't matter how many people vote. The electoral votes remain constant. For instance, if you're a Republican in California, or a Democrat from Arkansas, your vote for president won't count. And the last argument is that the Electoral College ignores the will of the people. There are over 300 million people in the United States, but only 538 electors will determine who the president is. Third parties do not have a place in an electoral system. People who support the Electoral College argue that the Founding Fathers wrote it into the Constitution because they believed it was the only way to safeguard against uninformed and uneducated voters. The founders wanted to balance the will of the populace against the risk of tyranny of the majority, in which the voices of the masses could drown out minority interests. People who support the Electoral College also argue that the Electoral College contributes to the cohesiveness of the country by requiring a distribution of popular support. The fear is that rural voices would be ignored if candidates only catered to urban areas with high populations. Lastly, people who support the Electoral College argue that the Electoral College contributes to political stability by encouraging a two-party system.
This local series of reports is in collaboration with the Purple Project for Democracy. For more, wethepurple.org. The series continues on the Community Spotlight on KUAF Local Matters.
This is Ozarks at Large. How about a pizza for Valentine's Day? How about a $1,000 pizza? Rolf Wilkin, the founder, president, and CEO of Fayetteville-based Eureka Pizza, as the pie for you.
And that's why we said, you know what if we let them show their love to their significant other, but also have something fun and, you know, come on, man. I mean, to have the ultimate pizza, I mean, that shows you love. It makes a statement, really.
All right, what is on this pizza?
Man, we got some good stuff. So we figured if we wanted a pizza that you're going to remember and it's going to really show your love, and if you're a true romantic like I think you are and I am, I mean, it's got to be special. So we had to figure, so Kobe beef. And then, you know, stepped up to the next level, we decided to encrust it with gold. So my wife suggested that. So you have the gold that you put on pastry. So we have, you know, very thin, but it's 24 karat gold. And then we took lobster and we poached it with champagne, poached it in champagne, and then added a little bit of vanilla. And then we've got several cheese. We've got like an aged camembert, and we've got Russian caviar.
Oh,
man, we've got really, it just, you know, we kept thinking, how can we step this up? How can we step this up? How can we step this up? And that's how our pizza came along.
Did you experiment with the taste? I mean, do all these things work together?
Well, these are bold flavors. And like love, you know, beauty, you know, it's all in the eye of the beholder, right? And so truffles can really kind of overpower. Caviar can be kind of strong. But we think, you know, really, if you think about it, it's just showing your love. I mean, love's not always perfect, right? There's, you know, so I think they do work together, but you may want to take small bites.
Of course.
And that's love, right? That's romance.
Right, right.
Yeah, small, it really is. It's for the lover out there, and there's lots of them out there. And I think, you know, we caution you to don't mortgage your house for this, right? You don't want to do that. But, you know, if you really want to take your love to the next level, this will do it. I guarantee it.
It's the conventional round shape?
It's round. We thought, you know, the heart would be distracted because we wanted the ingredients to be at the star of the show.
Thin crust? Thick crust?
You know, really anything you want, but we do think our classic traditional crust kind of holds kind of the weight of these ingredients. And we've got a few add-ons we can do. We can do different kind of oils that we could put on, like a Spanish olive oil, we think, that might kind of add to it. You know, we've got maybe some chocolate we could do too, you know, kind of give that sweet and savory kind of sensation going along. And, you know, we do recommend, you know, nice champagne. That would be on you, of course, because we're not licensed, you know, wine sellers, of course.
Yeah, see, now I'm a beer and pizza guy. Can you think of a beer that would pair well with this?
You know, I think kind of like a chocolate stout. And we've got so many great, you know, local breweries. But, man, you couldn't go wrong with a Bike Rack, a Fossil Cove, I mean, you know, a Core. They make, I think, a beer that can stand up to a pizza like this and then – but stand up to love, really, is I think what it's all about.
You suggest 48 hours notice that you want this pizza.
You know, because it is, you know, some difficult ingredients to source. And we want to make sure, like, we have enough Kobe on hand and, you know, different things like that because – as a lot of your listeners may not know, most of these ingredients we don't keep in stock.
Really? You don't have gold? You don't have gold right there?
You know, we want to make sure, you know, that we have the most skilled of our pizza chefs, I mean, combining these amazing flavors to create that, you know, that your true love is going to appreciate.
Pick up only, or is it delivered?
Yeah, we'll absolutely deliver it, so absolutely. I might probably deliver it personally.
I was going to say, if I'm the delivery person, I'm a little tense. Because usually I'm not delivering a $1,000 pizza, right?
You know, you almost want like the hazard lights on. Yes. I don't know if we can get a police escort. You know, they do very nicely in Fayetteville. Like for your final ride in your hearse, you get a police escort. So I don't know if they'll do that for us. But, you know, we love the police and I think they love us. So I don't know. We're going to get it to you safely, right? So it'll be okay.
Have you tested this?
We have. And that was, you know, we took the picture. And so we did try it. And that's when we realized that it really was an experience. And the love that it showed, I mean, with strong flavors, but, you know, love has its rough spots and, you know, the strength shines through and the personality and the physical beauty of your loved one. I think the pizza kind of reflects that there's, you know, kind of some rough edges there. And but I think it's all going to combine and it'll be a Valentine's Day you'll never forget.
It's a meal and a metaphor. I love it.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, often you get your credit card statement and you don't want to look at it. This might be something you save, right? And this could be like the family legend. I mean, it could be in 80 years. I say, man, great-great-grandpa, you know, Kellum, got this, and it just showed the love for the family.
Finally, I also like pizza the day after, right? Cold pizza?
I think no doubt that these ingredients are going to stand up, you know, to that. And, you know, it may be like a wedding cake. You may want to save it for an anniversary. You know, maybe freeze a portion in 5 or 10 years. You can remember that credit card bill.
Rolf Wilken is the founder, president, and CEO of Eureka Pizza in Fayetteville. The $1,000 pizza is available for Valentine's Day.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
Dean Martin on Ozarks at Large. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Goshen. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ozarks at Large is produced at the Carver Center for Public Radio in downtown Fayetteville. Contributors today included Antoinette Grajeda, Timothy Dennis, and Zuzana Sitek, who provided the reporting about the Rogers Arts and Culture Manager. Timothy Dennis also mastered our show and produced Reflections in Black. Reflections in Black, hosted and written by Raven Cook, the founder and CEO of Foundations Black Education History Programming. Our thanks to our partner, Roby Brock, with Talk Business and Politics for his assistance today. You can find out more from Roby and his team at talkbusiness.net. Our theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. His most recent CD is titled Safe and Sound. Antoinette Grajeda helps us conclude many of our shows by searching through our archives to find musicians who recorded songs just for us. We close out this show with Brother Moses and the song Hopeless. The band will be at Fairlane Station in Springdale Saturday night beginning at 6:30. You could see them tonight or tomorrow if you're in Tulsa this evening or Oklahoma City tomorrow night, and mark down June 13th when the band hits the stage at Rough Trade NYC in New York City. But they will be closer to home Saturday. More about Brother Moses on their Facebook page. Thanks so much for listening. We're back tomorrow at noon and 7 on KUAF.
Dreaming, but I'm still waiting on a sign. Like I believe in something. Like something believes in me. But waiting is too easy. Wishing is too easy. Nothing which is easy will free me. And this is where I turn around and make my way back to reckless and naive. And I refuse to listen to the sound. The future is loud, but my friends are with me now. Now will last while I used to never smile. Show my teeth or be open and change. But all of my friends are with me. I may lose my way, you know I've already lost it today. Just to be clear, I admit to all of my crimes. No, I've been a fool so many times. Cause when a hopeless romantic finds love, then he's bound to start looking in places that he's not gonna find hope at all. I'm always gonna fall. It's not so hopeless after all. Patience, you know that I've been trying so hard. Well, that's a lie. Okay, I'll keep this clean and I'll depict a different scene and I'll try to be something that I'm not right now. But that's okay. I'll get up in the morning and I'll only have to walk out the door one time. And no matter how it goes, well, I've been a mess before and I could have been useless, but now I'm something more. I admit to all of my crimes. No, I've been a fool so many times. But I hope this romantic finds love, that he's bound to start looking in places that he's not gonna find. Hope at all, I'm always gonna fall. It's not so hopeless after all.